Bibles to Proverbs chapter 2, please. We'll be in Proverbs 2 in just a second. All right, we're continuing our series on marriage. Today we're talking about communication and we're talking about listening specifically. Next week, Lord willing, we'll talk about speaking. So we're getting the first half today. And, you know, we got to realize that this is an application of the principles we've been talking about in the previous weeks. We're talking about loving, cherishing, nourishing, respecting, all that stuff. One of the ways we do that is listening to each other, being good in our communication. So important. Gary Thomas wrote this, husbands, cherishing often isn't about what your wife is saying, it's about who is saying it, which is a good quote. You know, we love our wives, and so one of the ways we cherish them and love them and demonstrate that is to listen to them, and vice versa. Listening is good, and it's hard. It's a hard thing. You know, I have this saying when Nicole's talking to me, sometimes I just, my mind just chases a rabbit, you know, and she's very patient with me, and I guess there's a look on my face or something now, because now she can tell it's happening, and she just like, okay, come back to me, and repeats what she said the last 20 seconds. So thankfully, I've got a patient wife, and I used to say, I'm a genius, you know, they say a genius mind just goes all these, but I think we both know now at this point, that's not what's happening. It's just you're not listening. So we need patience with each other. It's a hard skill to learn, doing the best we can. But couples should listen about big things, little things. You know, this is how a relationship is maintained, is communication. And so we got to be good listeners in order to maintain that. Bonus points if we put our phones down, turn the TV off, eye contact, ask questions, be sincere, all those good things are bonus points. You know, if you think back to your dating days, one of the things that was so intoxicating about dating was you talk so much. And here's somebody that's so interested in you and so curious about you. And you ask them questions and they ask you questions and you just talked about everything. And you know, your past, your present, your future dreams, you just talked about everything. And you want to know how everything was going every day and you just felt cherished. That here's somebody that cares about me that much. And we shouldn't stop that. You know, life, you go through life and you have to deal with the everyday grind of life. That's true. But we shouldn't stop cherishing each other in that way. Okay, so we're going to talk about a few things here. First of all, I must want to listen. And that's why we're in Proverbs chapter 2 and verse 1. My son, if you will receive my words and treasure my commandments within me, make your ear attentive to wisdom, incline your heart to understanding. Okay, so like a lot of the passages we're reading in this quarter, that's not a marriage passage per se. In fact, it's, you know, father to son is the way it's framed there. But we're just looking at the principle of listening. And just notice what he's saying there. You got to treasure my commandments within. You got to make your ear attentive to my wisdom. And you got to incline your heart to understanding. So good listening takes a good attitude, first and foremost. We've got to have in our mind, I want to listen. I need to listen. This is good to listen. Otherwise, I'm not going to listen. It involves the heart, the attitude, not just the ears. There are a ton of Bible examples of people who had the correct words go through their ears, but it didn't sink in for lots of different reasons. Think of the Pharisees. Things just didn't sink. They heard a lot of great sermons, a lot of great teaching from Jesus and the apostles, and for maybe 99% of them, it didn't sink in. Nicodemus is an exception. Paul became an exception. But by and large, it didn't sink in. They didn't want to hear it. They had all kinds of other issues going on, and so they didn't hear. For the heart of this people has become dull. With their ears, they scarcely hear. Matthew 13:15. So that's an attitude problem. It wasn't a hearing problem. It was an attitude problem that caused them not to listen well. Parable of the sower, Luke 8, same deal. In that parable about being a good listener, I mean, the same word, it's the word that's being like seeds thrown all over the earth. And you've got different kinds of soil, different attitudes, different hearts in receiving or not receiving that seed. And that's what that parable about. Now, that's about receiving the word of God, but it's about the principle of listening. So the final soil there, the good soil, heard the word in an honest and good heart. So again, there's the attitude. You got to be honest and good, and that attitude is there. Then you're going to receive the word of God. Let me turn to John chapter 10. John chapter 10. And again, thinking about people who did not listen well. Here's another example of that. John 10 and verse 20. Many of them were saying, he has a demon and is insane. Why do you listen to him? Okay, talking about Jesus. So, you know, the context here, Jesus had just done a lot of good teaching. This is John 10, where he's been saying, I am the good shepherd, all that stuff. That's right there. And this is the way they responded. There's a division. Who is Jesus? All that. And a bunch of them were saying, verse 20, he's got a demon. He's insane. He's crazy. Why are you listening to this guy? And so just completely disrespectful, irreverent. And obviously, they're not going to listen. So hopefully, I'm not accusing my wife or husband of having a demon or being insane. But I might think, well, they don't know what they're talking about. Or at least about this subject, they don't know what they're talking about. And so if as long as that's my attitude, I'm not going to listen well. Because I don't think there's anything worth hearing. And so all of that just to establish, look, it starts with the heart, the right attitude. I want to listen. It's important. Even if we're talking about maybe small things, at least to me, this is my spouse who I cherish. And so I'm going to listen. I'm going to take the time and energy to listen. None of us are perfect in that, but that's the ideal. That's what we're shooting for. And again, I know these passages we're talking about listening, especially to God's word, but those principles can help us in marital communication. Do I want to hear what my spouse has to say? That's what it boils down to. Okay, remember this. Listening does not mean you agree. I can listen even if I don't agree. I can just be a good listener and maybe learn something. It doesn't mean I agree now. It doesn't mean that I'm going to agree when they're done talking. But I can still be a good listener and respect and show my love that way, especially in a marriage. Shouldn't we be respectful enough, courteous enough, that we would do that we would listen to their point of view, even if we think, I don't believe that, I'm not going to come around to that point of view? Shouldn't we at least validate each other in listening to their point of view? There are some things that prevent us from being good listeners. One is we may just have different interests. And, you know, I don't want to hear you talk about this particular thing. It's kind of boring to me. And that sort of thing, if we think about it as a Venn diagram where he's got his interests, she's got her interests, and then there's some mutual interests. Part of this might be we need to explore our mutual interests and start some conversations there, and then maybe it'll branch out to our unique interests after that. That might be part of it. Another hurdle might be that there's just a big difference in personalities. And one person is a big-time talker. You know, I didn't look up what they say, how many words people say in an average day, 10,000, 20,000, whatever. And you might be married to like a 3,000-word guy or something. You know, he's just not going to say as much, or maybe she is not going to say as much. Or maybe they would if you would give them the space to talk. Maybe you're just used to doing 99% of the talking, and if you backed off a little bit, they would have more time to talk. Sometimes that happens. In other words, one person might be really good at talking and not super great at listening. And so if people ever joke about you, hard to get a word in edgewise with that person. It's you. You're the one I'm talking about. And this might be something you could do in your marriage, is back off a little bit and give them the time. Some people just take longer to form sentences and to form their thoughts and get them out. And that's just the way some people are. And if we'd back off a little bit, that might help. Here's an example. I once counseled a couple who were about to experience divorce because the wife could no longer accept the husband's silence. In my office, alone with me, the man turned into a chatterbox. However, when his wife joined us, he became stone quiet. Certain subjects of interest to him brought him out. Once these subjects were introduced, he could then continue to converse on a wide range of other subjects. Okay, so this is Dr. Harley. So this is, you know, he's counseling this couple. So he gives them an assignment. What I want you to do is balance the conversation. So if you have a 10-minute conversation, wife, you talk for 5 minutes and then be quiet and let him talk for 5 minutes. You gotta balance it and even it out a little bit. So this is what happened. At first, she expected him to say nothing during this time, but once they included subjects that interested him, he filled his half of the 10 minutes until she was required to balance their conversation, giving him an equal amount of time to speak. She remained unaware of her habit of interrupting him. Those who monopolize conversation create an unwanted habit in their spouse's silence. Okay, so here's a couple that they were about to divorce. She said, he never talks. And it might just be you need to just let him talk a little bit. So maybe that's going on in your marriage to some degree, and maybe that will help. So being a good listener might involve some self-discovery. You know, what does my spouse want to talk about? What subjects are of interest to him or her? And let them talk at their pace, not mine. Okay, let me pause there. Comments, questions, anything you want to say on all that? Mark?
I think that's really good advice, and I've heard that from other directions also, that women tend to, and this is not always true, this is just a generalization.
But be careful.
Women will often converse by interrupting and jumping in, and that's how they're showing support for the other woman's point of view. But oftentimes, a man will see that as being interrupted, and so he will just stop talking because you want to talk, so you will just back off.
Okay.
But a lot of times, it takes guys longer to get their words together. So, you know, if a woman asks him a question, he doesn't say anything right away, he's still thinking. So you've got to, wait a lot longer than you think you have to.
There's some time, ladies.
I even noticed this just running meetings with other guys. I'm trying to move the meeting along, and I'll ask for comments on something, and I don't hear anything for 5 or 10 seconds, and so I start moving along, and immediately somebody will start speaking because they were thinking that whole time.
Okay.
And I just didn't give them long enough. Yeah. So you have to be aware of that difference.
Okay. Yeah, good point. And
maybe there's some tendencies in men and women and just personalities, you know? So, Brent?
In just about all relationships, when someone says something that we disagree with, we mentally cut them off.
Okay.
That's foolishness, that's craziness. But real learning probably comes from understanding why someone feels the way they do. You just cut someone off, you'll never learn anything. Mentally cut somebody off. But, you know, although it's attributed to husbands living their wives, live in an understanding way, you probably can apply it a whole lot. Try to understand why people feel the way they do. You know, I mean, won't even get into politically, but, you know, very often we cut the other side off entirely. And at the very least, to understand why other folks feel the way they do, it's probably where a good bit of learning would come from.
Okay, I'm glad you said it. And that's
exactly what we're talking about. The attitude has to be there. I'm at least going to listen. It doesn't mean I agree, but I at least can listen and probably learn something. Keith?
Fine, Genesis 2:24 just covers a lot when it comes to a relationship. And for this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. And when the man leaves his father and mother, he's left that authority there, and he's joined himself with another. Now, I know when I'm hungry, I'm going to take care of it. And I know when I have a want, I'm going to consider it. Well, if I'm one flesh with another, with my wife, shouldn't I have both the same wants and the same desires and the same needs as her? It would seem that way. That's what God's trying to tell us, is that we're having to take this under consideration as one body.
Yeah.
And that we have to consider that authority and not subject ourselves to the other authorities among man.
Okay. So like we said in Ephesians 5,
husband nourishing and cherishing his wife. So she's now in that circle of, okay, I'm taking care of myself and her as if she's myself. Yeah, love her as yourself. Okay, Kyle?
This point about some other topics that we had talked about, but you know, I think what makes the union between a woman and a man as good as it is the fact that we are different. You didn't want to list the averages of what men and women spoke a day words, but it's like 25,000 for a woman and 10 for a man.
Okay.
It is a significant difference, and I know that's funny, I'm not trying to make a joke, but women speak about things differently than men do. And so maybe we need more time, as Mark said, but I think it's also that we communicate differently. And I will just be frank, my problem is rewiring or trying to get myself to view it that way, like in the moment. It's hard to just comprehend the difference. My brain is wired as a man. That's the way I think and speak, and so it's hard sometimes to just be patient enough or to think enough or whatever it is that I need to do to understand it from a different direction. And I think Mark was trying to get to some of that, but we're different.
Yeah.
And it takes work. But I will just say, if a man has to listen to 25,000 words a day, it makes sense that we have to put in a lot more work than the women do at 10,000.
Okay, I'm just saying. A great opportunity for love.
That's right.
For love.
That's right. Yes, sir. Yeah, cheers. That's right.
Cheers. 25,000 words. Okay. Okay. Well, that's a good way to segue to the next point here. Slow down to avoid flooding. Look in James chapter 1. One of the great verses we have about how to handle ourselves, how to handle these bodies that God has blessed us with and designed for us. James 1, 19 and 20. This you know, my beloved brethren, but everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. For the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God. Okay, now keep in mind, this is from our Creator, who created our bodies. So He knows how our bodies work. He knows how everything works. He gave us heart rates that go up. He gave us stress hormones that flow through our veins. He gave us all of that. And He also gave us instructions like this passage to use those bodies in the proper way. And I think that enriches our understanding of verses like that if we think about it from that standpoint, that He's our Creator telling us how to use these bodies He designed for us. So think of the times when you have been in a conversation and it's heated, it's emotional, it's a sensitive topic, it's real touchy, it's, you know, it's one of those kind of deals. And, you know, you feel, your body reacts to that. You feel different. Your stress hormones kick in, your adrenaline and others start going, and that affects your brain. You just don't think as logically as you otherwise would. Your heart rate goes up, your blood pressure goes up. You might feel that flush in your neck or your face. You know, you just feel that. Your breathing gets faster and more shallow, and people tend to interrupt more when you're feeling that stress and that anxiety. You talk faster typically. Your muscles can tense up, and your body's getting ready for that fight or flight reaction, and you're ready to do one or the other of those things. Your mouth might go dry. Your skin might start to tingle or sweat. All kinds of things like that that happens with our bodies, that physiological response. And that's what I mean by flooding. That's flooding. So we think about, we get in these conversations, and it's not just where do you want to eat. It's something big, something emotional, and we get flooded. And it's more pronounced in men. Talking about, again, the differences in men and women, it's more pronounced in men. Let me read an excerpt from Dr. Gottman. Okay, I'm behind a click here. The male cardiovascular system remains more reactive than that of the female and slower to recover from stress. For example, if a man and woman suddenly hear a very loud, brief sound like a blowout, most likely his heart will beat faster than hers and stay accelerated for longer, according to research by Robert Levinson and his student Lauren McCarter. Same goes for their blood pressure. His will become more elevated and stay higher longer. Psychologist Dolph Zillman at the University of Alabama has found that when male subjects are deliberately treated rudely and then told to relax for 20 minutes, their blood pressure surges and stays elevated until they get to retaliate. But when women face the same treatment, they are unable to calm down during those 20 minutes. It's interesting that a woman's blood pressure tends to rise again if she is pressured into retaliating. Since marital confrontation that activates vigilance takes a greater physical toll on the male, it's no surprise that men are more likely than women to attempt to avoid it. It's a biological fact. Men are more easily overwhelmed by marital conflict than are their wives. Okay, so make what you will of secular research. But let me point this out. Before we comment more on that, let me point out, if this is all true, whatever it is that's true, we all get flooded from time to time. We all feel that stress. God did not make a mistake by designing our bodies that way. You say, well, why did God make us that way where we, you know, we get so stressed out and we can't think straight and we talk fast and we maybe make a mistake in what we say or do? Well, God didn't make a mistake. There are times when jumping up and doing something decisive and taking some bold action is exactly what needs to be done. And God made us with bodies that are able to do that. It can ramp up to an excited phase and we could do what needs to be done. For example, when David fought Goliath, I suspect his heart was thumping in his chest. His body needed to do that. When Paul stood up in front of another hostile audience, he needed the ability to ramp up that adrenaline and deal with whatever he was dealing with that day, Thessalonica or wherever he was that day. And so God made adrenaline for a reason. God made heart rates that go up for a reason. God made all that for a reason. There's a time and a place for all of that. There's a time and a place for taking risks. There's a time and a place for making bold decisions, taking decisive action, and getting amped up to a high level. So that's all good. In no way in any of this am I implying that God made a mistake or God gave us this hindrance in doing things right. What we're trying to clarify now is just that there's a time and place for everything. And that's why I have Ecclesiastes 3:7. There's a time to be silent, and there's a time to speak. A good reminder to us a lot of times. And so we need to recognize that when my spouse brings up a touchy subject, now is not the time to go to battle. Now is not the time when I need that David versus Goliath, I'm going to kill you kind of attitude. This is the time for me to obey James 1:19 and these other passages and slow down, be quick to hear and slow to speech. This is God giving us instructions. I made the body. I know how it works. This is how you use it. Slow down, quick to hear, slow to speak. We don't want to ruin good communication just because God designed us with this stress response in the body. Look at the book of Proverbs, please, chapter 15. Let's read a few of these. We could just double or triple this list. There's so many good verses back here in Proverbs about communication, but let's read a few here. Proverbs chapter 15, Scripture tells us over and over again the benefit of slowing down, calming down, controlling our anger. Proverbs 15 and verse 28, the heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. Okay, notice there, slowing down, think about what you're going to say, ponder how to answer. Go backwards, 14:29, Proverbs 14:29. He who is slow to anger has great understanding, but he who is quick-tempered exalts folly. Look in 16:32. He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty. He who rules his spirit than he who captures a city. Proverbs 17:27. He who restrains his words has knowledge, and he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. Chapter 19 and verse 11. A man's discretion makes him slow to anger, and it is his glory to overlook a transgression. Let's add one more. 29 verse 11. A fool always loses his temper, but a wise man holds it back. And we could just go on and on and on. I mean, over and over, we're told this, especially in the book of Proverbs, but in several places in the Bible. And so if we follow God's instructions, that gives us more time. He's telling us, slow down, take your time, slow down, be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. And if this research is right, then the typical male body needs more time to do that than the typical female body. But these verses are for all of us, so it doesn't really matter. All of us need to be applying this. All of us need to be taking God's wisdom to heart. Okay, so think about all that. Here's an example of a practical takeaway from that information. One of the most well-documented tendencies that we have as a couple is this withdrawal pursuit tendency, where one person is trying to pursue a topic and the other is withdrawing. So I told ChatGPT, give me a picture of a husband and wife. The wife's trying to talk and the husband's walking away. So there we go. Okay, so in this scenario, she is pursuing some talk. She's saying, honey, we need to talk about Johnny's grades. And he said, every time we talk about that, we fight. And so I'm out of here. And so he goes to check his email or whatever he's doing. So withdrawal pursuit. And 85% of the time, according to Gottman's research, the one that's withdrawing is the husband. Or also known as the stonewaller or the avoider. So back in the old days, when I learned this in college, the example was the husband would put up the newspaper. You know, she brings up a subject and he puts it up and ignores her. And so nobody reads the newspaper now. So I guess it would be your phone. So the husband gets his phone or he just walks away from it completely. We're just going to avoid this topic because we fight about it. If we bring it up, we fight about it. And so, you know, that's a lot of tension there. Here's somebody that's, one person is saying, we need to talk about this. It's never going to get resolved. We got to do something. And the other one's saying, we got to avoid it because it leads to nothing but trouble. So what do you do about that? One suggestion would be plan a time. Literally put it on the counter. We're going to talk about this Saturday morning as soon as we wake up, before the kids wake up. We'll talk about it at 7 a.m. or whatever. And it's on the calendar. Because what sometimes happens is one person is thinking about this conversation ahead of 3, 4, 5 days. They got a lot of points in their head. And the other person is blindsided. Maybe he is oblivious. He doesn't know it's coming. And so he doesn't know what to say. And it takes him longer, maybe anyway, even if it was all equal. And so here now he's got 24 hours or whatever to plan what he's going to say. He's got the time to kind of calm down. And it still may be a tense, emotional conversation. But at least he's had a little bit of time to think ahead what he wants to say and that sort of thing. Back here in the book of Psalms, Psalm 4. In Psalm 4 and verse 4, tremble and do not sin. Meditate in your heart upon your bed and be still. I like that phrase. Meditate upon your heart in your bed and be still. In other words, sleep on it, if I'm reading that right. Think about it, sleep on it, calm down, think about what you want to say. Some topics you need to talk about. You can't just avoid it forever. And it may be emotional when you get there, but if you slow down, take the time, put it on the counter, we'll talk about it, and then that allows the pursuer to calm down. Okay, it's coming. We're going to talk about it, but I can calm down for a second. Okay, there's my advice, one way to apply these biblical principles to that situation. Okay, let me pause here. Any comments, questions on any of that? Teresa?
Not the wisest person in the room, but I will tell you a tool that helped me.
Oh, please do.
I kept a picture of my husband when he was a child, because a man is really comprised of two individuals together. One is a child who is full of fun and life and wants to explore and wants to adventure. The other is the warrior who provides and protects. That man is the same man. So when I got, I didn't get angry. I don't usually get angry. But when I got aggravated, I would remember I'm talking to a child man.
I understand what you're saying. Yes.
Not that he was stupid. He was not stupid. And I didn't treat him in a condescending manner.
Right.
But I had to remember, this man has feelings, and he has a heart that's gentle. And so keeping that visual aid of him as a child was very helpful.
Oh, I'm glad you said that.
Thank you so much for sharing that. That is good. I love that. Yeah, here's a tender soul that you're talking to. He's the man, he's the warrior, all that, but he's a tender soul. I love that. Thank you. Your husband was blessed to have you treat him like that. Keith?
I like this. Quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. It's one of my favorite verses.
Yeah.
And it leads to what my mother-in-law, who just spoke, gave me advice. Because freshly married, I did not understand a lot of things. Communication was changing. And you walk in, you see your wife crying. And as a guy, I'm going to war. Someone hurt somebody I love. And she goes, no. Sometimes she needs to cry. Best marriage advice. Sometimes she needs to cry. And then there's the other. It's along the same. And it's that quick to hear, slow to speak. Sometimes Laura has to look up and go, Keith, I need, you know, a few hours by myself. Just go. And guys, take that advice and run. Dead serious. Go fish. Go do your favorite hobby. Go whatever. Get out of there. And let her be her. But it comes back to the prior lesson on communication. And that communication, because I don't understand the emotions she's going through, is going to bless me in the end. And later, as you've just stated here, we can talk. We can refocus. We can come back together. And we can become one. Stronger. Because we listened to each other.
Yeah, there's a lot of kinks,
especially early in your marriage. Working out the kinks. You're trying to get good at this. Madison, did you have your hand up? No? Sorry. Angel?
Okay. One of the best advice that I got was from my aunt whenever we first got married. She is not much taller than I am, and she's married to a gentleman that's 6'5".
Okay.
He was a farmer.
Okay.
He was a big guy. And she told me, she said, sometimes you can't put into words how you're feeling as a woman. And she said, sometimes I have to look at him and go, I love you, but I can't, if I try to say right now what I'm feeling, it's not going to come out right. It's not going to come out the way it should. And she said, so I would tell him at times, I love you, but I can't talk to you right now.
Okay.
And she said, you know, she said that I would come back later and we would discuss it. But she said, what I had to say right then was not going to be constructive and it was not going to help.
Yeah.
And I've always tried to remember.
Well, that takes a lot of
maturity to realize that. And that's part of the cherishing, is allowing that to happen and take place on its own course. Let's get to this third point here. Focus on listening before figuring out your response. How easy is that, right? Not easy all the time. Let's read some more Proverbs. I've got a few on the screen. Proverbs 18:13. He who gives an answer before he hears, it is a folly and shame to him. this reminds me kind of what Brent was talking about. Look, you got to at least hear people out. Don't turn your brain off and say they're not going to say anything worthwhile. Super important to listen well, really hard to listen well. It's a hard skill to learn. Proverbs 17:14, the beginning of strife is like letting out water, so abandon the quarrel before it breaks out. So we're not trying to get to strife. That's not the point. We're not trying to fight. We're trying to talk. We're trying to have a conversation. We're not trying to get to strife or arguing. Proverbs 20, verse 3, same thing. Keeping away from strife is an honor for a man, but any fool will quarrel. So it's not like, okay, we're going to fight. Let's have the fight. We need to have a fight about it. You don't have to have a fight about it. We're trying to talk about it. We're trying to converse as adults here who love each other, and that's the goal, not to draw each other into a fight. Okay, so again, lots of proverbs about this, the wisdom of doing this, trying to understand all of this. Again, we're just applying what we've already been talking about in all these classes, cherishing, loving, respecting. One of the ways we do that is we listen. And you know, the thing is, somebody's talking, you're trying to figure out what to say next and rebut whatever they're saying. And we're trying not to do that. We're trying to just really listen to hear what they're saying. Okay, now let me tell you about something. This is going to be a little weird. Let me just prepare. I'm going to tell you a little technique. Nicole and I used to do this when we were first married. It's called the speaker-listener technique. And it's weird. I'm going to tell you about it, and you're going to say, that's weird. We're never going to do that. And that's true. It is weird, and most people will never do it. But I'm going to talk to you about it anyway, because some people might do it, and it might be very helpful. And it was very helpful to us early in our marriage, first couple years especially, to help you get through a tense, emotional conversation where you're having trouble discussing it without things going haywire. So it's coming from these researchers here. They've got a book, Fighting for Your Marriage. It's called the Speaker-Listener Technique, Howard Markman and his colleagues. So again, the point here is just to try to be a good listener. And all this technique does is put some rules in place to force that. And so that's what makes it awkward and weird, is the rules that are there. And you say, well, we would never do that. I understand. Most people probably wouldn't. But it's one way of putting these Bible principles into practice and being a good listener by adding some structure. So if you think of communication where it's important to get it correct, one of the things we do, not just in this technique, but in other situations, is we repeat it. So like when you order food at a restaurant, the waiter will repeat your order, make sure they got it right. Or a pilot talking to an air traffic controller. I'm not a pilot. I don't know what they say, but they repeat things back and forth, at least in the movies. Ed Wood can confirm. Others can confirm. Runway 7? Runway 7. Roger. Whatever. So you're repeating. We got to get some things straight. That's very important to get straight. If you go, policemen, same way on the radio. Military, same way on the radio. All that sort of stuff. If you go have surgery, the hospital staff is going to ask you like 4 times, what surgery are you having? Because sometimes they've done surgeries and they did the wrong surgery on the wrong person. So they're repeating it. What are we doing today? Amputating my left leg. Amputating your left leg. Okay, we're going to put a big thing on your left. Okay, so you repeat and repeat and make really, really sure we've got this communication clear. And so that's what this technique is kind of like, is we're going to make sure we understand each other. And it's awkward. You wouldn't normally do it in a normal conversation, but that's kind of the point by design. That's why you're doing it, is to slow down and make it stick. So this is what they say about it. Couples say this technique is the single most useful thing that they've learned in our workshops. Speaker-listener technique is one of the most powerful tools we've found for two people to transform a conversation. Okay, so that's what they're saying about their deal. Okay, so here it is. Here's the rules. One person is the speaker and the other is the listener. Rules for both of you. First of all, the speaker has the floor. So the way you do it is you get a physical object like a pin or a pillow or a ball of socks or some physical object. Whoever's holding this has the floor. I got the floor. And so that means I'm the speaker. That means my wife's the listener. And so the speaker has the floor. That's the rule. Share the floor. So over the course of the conversation, we're going to pass this physical object back and forth and take turns being the speaker and the listener. Number 3, no problem solving. So this whole thing is just about listening. It's not about actually resolving the problem, although a lot of times that happens just by listening to each other. So it's no problem. The rule is you can't problem solve. You can't. It's just I'm hearing what you're saying and getting your point of view. That's the whole point of this deal. Okay, rules to the speaker is speak for yourself, don't mind read. So you're not trying to say, I know your perspective is, you're not saying that. You're saying my perspective is, and you explain it. Don't go on and on. You know, they don't want to listen for 30 minutes. Give them like 30 seconds and let them digest. Let the listener digest. So don't go on and on. And then here's the key part. stop and let the listener paraphrase. So you give like 30 seconds and stop. And then their job is to paraphrase what you just said back to you. Okay, I hear that you're saying this. And if they get it wrong, then you gently say, no, that's not exactly what I'm saying. Let me explain it again. And you do it again until they get it right, until they're able to paraphrase it back to you. So their whole thing is they're just tuning into you so much that they can put it back to you in their own words. Paraphrase it back to you. Rules for listener is paraphrase what you hear and don't rebut. Focus on the speaker's message. So you cannot, part of rebutting is facial expression. So you can't make a face, can't make a gesture, you can't do anything except listen and try to understand their point of view and say it back. You're not agreeing, disagreeing, you're not problem solving, you're not doing any of that stuff. You're just paraphrasing back to them what they said. That's it. And then you take turns. You give them the pen, don't throw it, but give them the pen. They've got the floor, they're the speaker, listener, and you switch roles and you do it again and you have a conversation that way. So it slows it down and it just puts some structure in place instead of back and forth. We're not doing that. We're slowing down on this conversation. We need to talk about this, get each other's perspective. And a lot of times that alone solves the problem. You realize you're not as far apart as you thought you were on this particular issue once you get all the information out there. It forces you to do that. If nothing else, it at least gives you information to have another conversation where you actually resolve the thing and come to some compromise on whatever it is. So it's good. So, hey, there you go. Take that for what it's worth. I put that's a bonus question on the homework that I'm going to email out later. So you can copy and paste those instructions there. You can look at that and have some fun with that at home. But listening to each other, really, really important. You know, if you were to ask your spouse, would you like me to become a better listener or a worse listener? Nobody's saying worse. We want to be listened to. It's just courtesy, it's love that we would do that for each other. Let me read one more passage, and then we'll have some time for comments here. Luke chapter 2. Just want to point out, this is Jesus when he's 12 years old, and he's deity, and so he knows everything. But look what he says, what it says about him. Luke 2 and verse 46. Then after 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the teachers, both listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. I just want to point out that Jesus was listening to them. And this is not the only occasion where he did. When he's a full-grown adult, he's doing the same thing. He's listening, he's asking people questions then as well. But here's just one example where it kind of puts it succinctly there. So he's listening to them and asking questions. Now, he's deity. And my point in reading that is, we may say, I already know what you're going to say. Or, I know more than you. Well, if anybody could ever say that, it would have been Jesus when he's conversing with the Pharisees or whoever later on. He could have said, I know more than you, because that was absolutely true with Jesus. And yet, he would still listen. And sometimes he would ask him questions. Asking questions doesn't mean that you're necessarily trying to understand better. It could mean, for the sake of the people that are answering the question, you're trying to teach them. And Jesus did that when he was an adult as well. He asked them questions, tried to get them to think. Matthew 21:24 is an example of that. So my last encouragement there is, even when we think we know something or actually do know something, it's still good to listen. Jesus himself is an example of that. Okay, that's all I got for you. We've got several minutes to talk here. Comments, questions, what do you got for me as we think about listening? Okay, Madison, now you're raising your hand. Go for it.
You talked a lot about working out the kinks in early stages of marriage, and one of the biggest things that my husband and I have had to work through is the fact that we come from such vastly different learning histories. He didn't grow up in a church. He grew up with a very different childhood than I did. And I think when you're talking about both speaking and listening, you're doing both things through a filter. You're speaking through your experience. You're speaking through the marriages that you've gotten to watch as a child, maybe your parents' marriage. And in the same way, you're also listening through the same filter, so that a lot of bias comes into there. So when you talked a lot about it, when it's the slow down part, I'm a person who, when I get angry about something, I need time. Because if I say something right after I get angry, it's not going to be kind. So I need a minute, I need hours sometime to figure out what I'm actually angry about. But for my husband, silence was always very dangerous in the home where he grew up. So he's immediately wanting to talk about it, wanting to fix it just then. And so one of the biggest things that we overcame in the first few months of our marriage was, I am not walking away from you forever. I am walking away for a couple minutes to collect myself. But I had to understand that that was his bias coming into the conflict. Mine was, I actually meant it. He had a very different outlook on that situation. So when you're listening, you have to recognize that that's through a filter. And it's going to be a different filter than your partner's because you grew up differently. You grew up in different homes. You grew up with different communication styles. You grew up with different parents. So the filters are a critical part, recognizing them and also recognizing your partner's. It's a huge part.
Or getting to know each other.
I'm glad you said that. Yeah, because you can interpret the wrong thing. You're being quiet out of courtesy. You're trying not to say something bad, and he's interpreting it as, oh, something's wrong. Okay, I'm glad you said that. That's true for a lot of us, I think. Okay, what else? Sir?
It's another thing that might serve this process well is recognizing that if you're engaged in this listener-speaker technique, but the other person has not been briefed, so okay. That isn't in on what's going on here, doesn't know the rules, doesn't know what the technique is. That person may find it annoying you continually feeding back a paraphrased edition of what they've just said.
Yeah.
And it would be very telling and helpful if you phrase it with a, let me see if I've got this right, or let me see if I understand what you said before putting the paraphrasal, the repeat out there. Or it may come across as maybe criticism or jeering or something like that.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good point. And so that thing we were talking about, where is it? There it is. Yeah, that's something that you would do like as a, okay, we're going to do that thing now. So that's a good point you're making, and it would also explain why you're holding a ball of socks, you know, and talking with that floor. Okay, what else? Other comments, questions? Sir?
Talk about different conversations. I mean, some of them controversial. Some of them just trying to talk about, you know, things to do. And I don't know. I sometimes find it very difficult to, once we come to a conclusion, make a note, you know, write down what are we going to do? You know, what did we decide we were going to do?
Yeah.
Just go one step further with that. You know, in certain situations.
Right, yeah, that's a good thing. That's another thing
that has to do with me because I forget we've had a conversation. So she reminds me, we just talked about this. Are you Earth to David? Are you here? Yeah. Patient woman. Keith?
Laura and I used the speaker listener to a form. I didn't know that's what it's called. But we used that, but there's one other rule we added is don't bring up the past. We're dealing with what's on the table right here. Bringing up the past means you're keeping a scoreboard and trying to see who's going to win. That's not what you're trying to do. You're trying to be one.
Yeah.
One thing at a time. Good. Okay. JR?
Well, pretty much anything God's put us here, we have to work towards it, marriage relationship being no different. But with men and women being able to complement one another as we work through stuff like this, hopefully we see and appreciate the other person more as we understand them better, and we each get a reward from that labor of trying to understand our spouse better, and it's something that eventually draws us closer. But I think there's very much a reward in, if you spend the time trying to understand and come to a consensus, because we were made to work together. We sometimes get in the way of ourselves doing that, but that's what we're made for.
And it feels really good to be listened to, and it feels really bad not to be listened to. Yeah. Yes, sir, in the back.
I was going to say that, you know, we have the blueprint in how we ought to conduct ourselves and our roles as husbands and wives in the home. And if we truly trust in God, then we're going to make sure that we make the necessary adjustments to make sure that our home is peaceful. We have it all laid out for us. There's no need to run away from it. We should be running towards it. So at the end of the day, how do you want to conduct your home? Wives, you have your role. Husbands, you have your role. Children, you have your role. It is laid out in front of us. All we have to do is follow it.
Exactly.
So if we truly want to make this work, then guess what? I know that I have to go to work, And we have to remember this as husbands. Our workplace is not our escape. Our home is our sanctuary. Our wife is nurturing those kiddos, providing this safe space for us to come home away from all of that stress and the stuff that we have to go through at work. That is not our escape to be us, you know, to be away from our families and just have a great time and all that. No, no, you come home and guess what? You be an example to those children because they're looking up at both of us. How is dad interacting with mom? How is mom interacting with dad when they have tension in the house? How are they handling these things? We have to be the right example for our children because at the end of the day, when you look at it and you have daughters, look at yourself and you say, would I want my daughter to marry somebody like me? You know, she's looking at this man in the household that is supposed to be the man over the home. My son's looking at the example of the mother, you know, an example of the father, how he's conducted himself leading the home. You know, we have, it's work, but it's a team. If we come together as a team, it can work. And we look at the biblical scriptures that is laid out before us. If we follow it, we will be okay. That's our piece right there.
Perfectly said.
Great way to end the class. Thank you for that. Thank you for everybody's attention and participation this morning.